Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, I'm Billy Munger.
And hi, I'm Johnny Herbert.
And welcome back to Lift the Lid, the podcast that takes you flat out around the world of Formula One.
Guys, it's a real privilege today to be joined by none other than Williams team principal James Vowles.
Hi, Johnny. Hi, Billy.
That's right. We are so grateful for your time, James. But we're going to jump straight in before we do. If you missed it, please go and check out our Williams team special episode and give it a listen. We're going to have a quick look back at this team's amazing history.
Absolutely, Billy. But now, let's chat the future.
So, James, obviously, we've met each other around a paddock before, you know, but now, new pastures, you know, here at Williams. Firstly, just how does it feel to, you know, be in your new role here at Williams?
Fantastic is the first word that comes to mind. I mean, probably to describe the scene, I know we'll probably go into this, but we're currently sat around World Championship cars. Just a few. In a very special place. A place that you'll often find me coming to hide in if I need a few minutes of downtime. But it's an incredible arena. So being here surrounded by this, if you ever need any doubt as to why I'm here, it's here. You can see it around you. You can see the legacy. You can see the championships. How it's going for me? Good. You can see we were sort of there on the brink of scoring points this year. We've got a team that is hungry for it and a team that sort of lifted their heads up a little bit and willing to move with me in the direction of travel that we need to go in. And so it's a long journey. This is not the journey of a month or a week. This is many years. But it's a strong team that's behind me as we move forward.
We're seated here in the Heritage, Williams Heritage site with a load of cars around us from all the eras. What's your favourite one in here?
I struggle to pick one.
But you've got to.
It's no choice, yes.
I struggle to pick one. So I'll answer the question two different ways. The era where really I got into Formula One properly is right behind you there. It's the sort of Ayrton in the Williams, or it's certainly as it went up through
good
that
choice.
Phase.
Yeah.
But the cars behind your left shoulder, Johnny, are stunning examples of what you can do in Formula One. And the Mansell Prost era, but especially the Mansell car over there, I think that'd be my favourite.
Do you wish Formula One was, you know, that simple again? You know, look at the bodywork there. It's a little bit different to nowadays, isn't it?
I don't actually. You can't unlearn what you've learned. And if you look at the direction of travel of the world and where we're going, I think developing technology that actually has a real world purpose is a good part of Formula One. It used to be a part of Formula One back then, and it is still today in terms of what we're doing with road car technologies. Now, I'm quite happy with the direction of travel we're going in terms of adding just mind-blowing technologies if you really get into the depth of it.
That was the politically correct answer there, mate. Always looking forward to the future. Always looking forward to the future. Well said.
Out of which one would you can't take one away, to be completely
can't
clear.
Can't take one. But could we drive one?
Still none of those either. But Which one would be your preferred?
I'm a centre fan, so, you know, the ones over my right shoulder, yeah, 94 era, that would be a bit of me. But also, I was saying to Johnny earlier, when I won my first British Championship in karting, I used red 5 as my number. So, you know, for that reason, Mansell, you know, there's always a link there.
Perfect.
John? Yeah. Well, I'm going back a bit further. I'm going sort of 86, 87.
That, the that old makes turbo. Sense. I mean, you were racing back then.
No.
I think.
He's
no.
older than James.
Damn you. Damn you. No. I wasn't quite. Thank you, James. No. I'm an early 90s chap. But no, those turbos, they were just awesome. And it looks to me brilliant as well.
Interesting. Yeah, that's the beauty of this movie experience centre. There's something for everyone.
I can see why you like to hide in here.
Exactly.
You know, where did it all begin for you? The educational route, how was it for you?
So if we go way back,
that far back, wow.
if we go to the studies side, I was sort of mathematics, computer science with the 2 degrees, that sort of it's combined degree I did early on.
The clever stuff.
Yes.
It was only, I didn't know what to do, but I was quite good at mathematics and a little bit of computing. So I thought, let's combine the two, do a degree in it. And back, this is sort of 90s, late 90s.
Whereabouts did you do that?
The first one was a place called East Anglia, University of East Anglia, which I didn't do my high school education here in the UK. I actually did all of my schooling in Geneva, in Switzerland. So I didn't really know much about the UK. And I know I have an English accent to come across that way, but I really wanted to come back. Really wanted to come back here to the country that I was born in, and to do my studies here. I chose that university because my sister was there. That was it. I was a bit naive, really, in terms of choosing university. It's not that it's a bad university; it's a very good one. But went there, and about a year and a half into mathematics, computer science, as I was falling asleep at my desk writing a dissertation, I thought, this really isn't for me. I can't do this for the rest of my life, because the sort of prospects were there's a number in front of you, but finance, accounting could be a couple of them, certainly. And it wasn't really for me. So I applied to all 11 teams. I think, I'm pretty sure it was 11 teams back then. Johnny may know.
I think it was. You're right.
There you go. Noted.
Well done.
And got rejected to all of them. But they were very helpful. They were helpful in as much as they gave me direction, which is the reason why, is because no one really needs a pure mathematician or computer scientist. What we need is engineering backgrounds and clever graduates. So finished that degree off, then went to Crowdfield University and did a second engineering master's. And that was a good master's. It was a good university and did me well.
So is motorsport in your head at this point?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the reason for applying was I'm quite a tenacious, let's call it, person. So when someone says no, I'm like, no. This is going to be for me. And I thought I'd make it my life mission to get into Formula One. And I couldn't figure out how to get into Formula One, Johnny. Back then, everyone I met or spoke to, roughly speaking, when I was at Crownfield, had got into it, but it's an unclear pathway, which now fortunately does exist. It's much, much better for certainly graduates making their way in. But it was definitely in my head, definitely motorsport was there. So during the second degree, I was with a Formula 3 team at the same time, basically in the end running that, as it turns out, because their focus became Le Mans racing, then went to do Le Mans racing with them as well. So did the 24 hours, at the time it was with Nissan as the company, but enjoyed all of it, loved motor racing, but proper grassroots. I did everything from Formula Ford, GT racing, all that sort of business, from scraping tires to doing data analysis, as, nice. As all of you will know, and got my hands properly dirty.
Good.
And then during this period of time, I got through Cranfield, didn't know where the future would hold, and got very fortunate. I got effectively through a number of mechanisms. We were doing a school race car project that was taken on by a company called Jim Russell Racing. Fortunately, it went bankrupt 2 weeks after that. But in doing so, I had to do a presentation of it. In the audience was a number of Formula One teams, had job offers the next day. That's how it worked.
Must have been pretty good presentation then.
I always define it this way, and people keep correcting me, but I was fortunate. I was in amongst a peers of 20 that were just as clever. For whatever reason on that day, it was my day.
So Braun. So that's where it starts. Tell us about that.
Braun was there. I mean, as you know, so before then, 8 years or so in Formula One, leading through Honda, and then going up towards Braun GP. Yeah. And with Honda, a great organization, but just unfortunately, literally overnight, decided that's it, we're done. And it tried to close the doors. Fundamentally, you can't in the UK. And that's what became Braun GP. And Braun GP, same clever individuals that were there during 2004, 2006, during those years, and again now 2009. And I could have told you, and in fact, I think we did to a lot of people, that car was going to be quick. It was being developed in 3 wind tunnels simultaneously. Back then, we had no restrictions.
Yeah, sure.
And it was a behemoth of a car, a fantastic car. it's a special, special year for me. I remember every single race we can have over dinner, I could take you through hours upon hours of just discussions.
Go on then.
I mean, the main one is this. We had two chassis, two front wings, two rear wings for the first many races.
Yeah.
If we'd hit one of them off or not one of them off, that was it. It was game over. It wasn't
so
that
did
we...
the drivers get a real pep talk before those first few races?
100%. A lot of that actually continuing on into the Mercedes era. In the Mercedes era, even, we'd still remind them in the morning, look after these cars, all we have. Even though you had more bits, it was just... it was a part of, I guess, the culture that got built up from it. But the drivers were aware. Both knew. But I remember in the winter when we were still trying to pull the car together, literally. I mean, we cut sort of a few mil off the back of it to try and shoehorn a Mercedes engine into it. And then off the show car, just got seatbelts and brake discs and all sorts. I mean, just it was cobbled together. That really was it. Took the car in that form. Others were now testing away. I think it was in Barcelona Jerez at the time.
Right.
And every time the car got released, we thought, that's odd. That looks about... well, that's where ours was probably a year ago. I mean, maybe they got an update kit. And then another one came out, then another one came out. And you thought, actually, we're looking okay here, where people are a little behind. Went to Stowe Circuit at Silverstone, which many people don't know this, but Stowe Circuit isn't the full Silverstone circuit. It's this small little school circuit. And that's where we did a lap. That's all we could afford to do.
Yeah.
Did 50 laps of that, one set of tyres, out of two trucks. Really, if you went back 10 years, that was more, or 20 years, that's more how it was. I remember HPP turning up, looking around, going, where do we set up? I saw this tailgate half down, just there, that would do. That's where we are. Did 50 laps. Car worked. Obviously, you can't tell anything. Put it into the truck, literally drove it straight to Barcelona, took it out, and then we started doing laps. And the laps were interesting. So first and foremost, Jensen went in the car, did a six-lap run, make sure everything's okay, got back out. He said, it's not good. Just doesn't feel good. So much understeer. I can't drive around it. Okay. No problem. Made some changes. The team pretty much in the Mercedes era, the same team there. And so Andrew Shovlin was there at the time.
Yeah.
Made the changes, went back out, came back in and said, I'm so sorry. I thought it'd be, you know, I know this is going to be a strong year for us. It just doesn't feel good. Took him to the timing page where he was 3.5 seconds faster than anyone else.
Exactly. That's what
it's
I
the
heard.
Quickest I've heard a racing driver go, actually, the car's fine.
It's all right. No problem.
Classic driver. Yeah.
But it just goes to show you, actually, that everything is relative. It's a feeling in the car. Sure. You think, yeah, it's fine. But actually, as long as you're 3.5 seconds up in another car, doesn't matter.
You can do
it. I don't know about
you,
Johnny.
One.
I could drive an understeery car. It was 3.5 seconds up.
I wish I had a car that was 3.5 seconds quicker than everything.
I'd give that
it would have helped.
Indeed. I mean, as you saw, though, what happened is just without investment, people just ate into that performance lead very quickly. And that championship was won in the first six races.
Yeah.
But at no stage throughout that did any of us think there was a championship. All you were doing was, if you go to the next race and do a good job, we have potentially a job for the next 6 months. That's it. That's what the thought process was.
Who was that instilled by? Was that Ross's sort of leadership that got the team thinking in that way? Because obviously, starting off the season that strongly, you could see why people would get carried away potentially and think, okay, we've got something really special here.
I don't think so. It's such a strong group of individuals there that had been through really bad years and really good years that I think it was really... So first of all, one individual in my experience, same here. You can't create culture because you'd like it. Culture comes actually from your organization. You can show the signs of what you want, but the culture comes from your organization. I don't think so. I think it came from all of us, both for the scare across the winter that this might be it. This might be our Formula One career. It's finished. It's done. But also because there's very little ego. There's just, we want to go out and race, much as the same as you two. I'm here because I enjoy racing with all my heart. And the team is pretty much, the Bourne GP was built that way. And as a result, it's not about where we're going to be in the future. How do we make money out of this? It was, we know we can survive what's going on. Ross's time was spent a tremendous amount of the time, at least just trying to find where we're going to move on beyond there, who's going to buy the organization. So it wasn't in the day-to-day running of the organization anymore.
Yeah. What was the biggest thing you learned from that period, obviously working with Ross? Then, of course, you cross over to Mercedes. Obviously with Toto, what was the biggest thing that you've probably brought here, the most powerful thing?
I think the culture aspect I picked up on, but it really is that everything in Formula One teams, it's not without question, the better your internal, the slightly better the performance is, but everything comes down to people. So always down to people and culture. And everyone here is in this business, not because you want to make money, but because you love the sport. And what really it taught me, it's all about the people. It's all about the individuals. But you need to align everyone to the same direction and the same goal. And often that can get lost. You're focused on small, trivial, day-to-day problems, not the larger, how do we move forward 1 year, 2 years, and 3 years? And what certainly that whole period of time taught me is that you have to keep your head up out of the hole and in the ground that you've made for yourself almost, and just look forward and bring everyone else with you at the same time. And people and culture are your two most powerful tools that exist within an organization.
Haven't come to a bad place, have you, for the,
no,
the history and the history. Culture and everything else.
You sort of feel it. What's your first day here like? You know, when you've made that transition, you've been at Mercedes, you've been involved in that team through dominant years of Formula One, and you come into this new role here at Williams, and you know that the likelihood is you're not going to be winning world championships straight off the bat. You know, Formula One's a competitive sport, and Williams at the minute is on a team that's hoping to rise back up the grid. But did you feel when you came here that there was still a lot of positivity around the place? What was your initial impression of, you know, setting up base here?
First impression is a number of clever people, but with systems and methods that perhaps are based 20 years out of date in a lot of areas. And that's it. It's not that there isn't a want or desire to become competitive here. It's just many of the systems and methods through underinvestment, really, because the team really went through hardship. And what I found, there's a lot of individuals in what I would call survival mode. This isn't about how do we move forward. It was, I need to get this piece of the car now, otherwise the car's not moving. And that's really what I found here. And I can see how this organization did survive. Exactly that, right words for it. And now it's a direction, hopefully, of travel that I think everyone's bought into. But this isn't survival. We have funding that will last us for many, many years. Don't be worried about that. And don't be worried about taking 2 weeks to do something if it becomes better as a result of it. Don't rush into something. Take your time. And that cultural change is something that will take time in an organization. You can't change it overnight. It does take years, literally years, to change culture. Mm-hmm. But the direction of travel is the important one. But what I found was that clever individuals, but no structured systems, or at least no up-to-date ones. And I've said this publicly, but it's now that I've been here for several months, a complete mystery to me how this incredible car got built. It's about 17,000 components, and it's very hard to do that without a structured system that tells you where all the parts are, how long they're going to take. And yet we have a car. Four wheels are on it. It's going around the track. And those structures and systems don't exist. So how incredible will this organization be once they are in place is really the thought process I have.
Yeah, and the thing that interests me as well, of course, your journey is, we all know you as the strategist, head strategist at Mercedes. One thing is, what have you learned from that you've been able to bring here? But secondly, when was in your head, I want to be team principal? Has that always been there, or was it since joining Braun or Mercedes? When was that?
Good question. So you're right. The main thing I'm known for is strategist, but I would say 2009, definitely that was epitome of me doing it with one other individual. And I loved it because you did everything.
Yeah.
But that's not how you can do modern day Formula One strategy at a high level. It's a team of individuals, it's software systems development. And that sort of migrated around the probably 2010, 11, 12 region, to where I had such a strong team behind me that whilst I was known for it, really what I was doing was management of team orders, what we're doing with the drivers, and other systems behind it. And the strategy side was the hard work wasn't being done by myself anymore. And that migrated more and more. In terms of the desire to be team principal, I've always been ambitious, which has sometimes been a weakness, to be clear, not a strength. But
overall, a good thing, I think.
Better to have it than not.
But definitely, there were some early discussions I had with Toto as well. That was a direction of travel that we need to, that I can go into. I had a best way to describe it is I understand what goes on with the car, but I wouldn't be the best engineer in the room by any stretch of the imagination, or the best technical director. There are some far, far better people than me, but I'm able to take an understanding of that and communicate it in a way that is a little bit easier to understand for most others. That's my strength.
Well, we did start to see that from you at the end of your Mercedes time. We started to see you, you know, come more to the forefront in terms of explaining after races why strategy decisions were made and stuff like that. So is that involved in that role you were describing?
Exactly that. And also the role that I had changed. And this is thanks to Toto. But Toto, what he did is recognized all of these skills and recognized that I'm strategic. But there's many ways to think about strategy. So let's break it down. So the first one is, there's a race weekend, what you do in qualifying, what you do in the race. Then there's a bit more macro. What do you do with your engine allocation across the year? What do you do with bringing your updates in? What's the best way of moving forward across the year? You go wider again. What's the best way in regulations to be strong in 1 year's time, 2 years' time, 4 years' time? What do you want to do with the FIA? What do you want to do with Liberty? What direction of travel you want to go into? And my role sort of grew in that way. It started with the race weekend, what you do with decisions, and grew into, in the end, Formula E, GT3, what drivers do we take? Who do we take in the Young Driver Academy? All of that started to fall underneath me. And Toto was kind enough to give me that responsibility and allow me to grow into that role. And you can see how the team principal element was starting to form in all of this. So as I left Mercedes, there was a large chunk of the organization, especially the strategic direction we're traveling in, and all the drivers, be it race, young driver, simulator, it doesn't matter, all fell underneath me, that I'd already started to take over. And so the next direction of travel was just a very clear and obvious one, which is the next step above that again. And it's just something that I enjoy. The pressure means nothing to me. I really enjoy the aspects of being able to, for example, here, and that's the reason for coming here, ground up, be able to construct this in a way that I think will be successful and lead to success. But you have the opportunity.
It's a huge undertaking, isn't it?
It is, but it's a unique opportunity. This will exist once in your lifetime, and that's it.
Where are we with Williams? Where do you see what's happening this season? Obviously with Alex Albon, who seems to be someone that you've worked hard with. I know there was all this talk about the radio communication the other day. So you seem to have a nice relationship with the drivers, of course, Logan as well. How do you see the next couple of years?
Good question. So start with this car here has very little influence on what I can bring to it at the moment for obvious reasons. We still today, we have an interim technical director who's doing a great job, but we don't have what I would consider a full technical structure in place. There's a number of roles that are still missing. That's just what's happened, and that's where we are. And you'll be struggle to, the first thing I've got to do certainly anyway, which I said publicly as well, is make sure we put in these key positions in place, because it'd be very easy, and I get caught up doing this daily. You get into the real depth of the conversations, and it's lovely, and I enjoy it to bits, but you're not putting in the structures in place that actually allow you to move forward. And it's the structures, systems, bring in key individuals that are going to be really in their respective areas, leading the team forward. That's the real key driver behind it. So where we are today is every race we go to, we're clearly going to try and deliver with every point we have. I feel that I've brought a little bit already to the team. If we look at where we were, certainly in Bahrain testing to Bahrain race to then moving on to all the races, I think the car has become more competitive.
Yeah.
Admittedly, we have a point to our name and we're 10th. But as I said in a different form, that's not really a fair reflection over where we could be if everything was absolutely perfect. I mean, in Melbourne, so I think we would have finished 6th or 7th in a pure normal race. Possibly not. There were some very quick cars behind us, but we would have been in the points, that's for sure. But obviously, situations are what they are. I'm adjudicating by 6 laps of the race, but the car can be quick at certain points. However, I'm not here to fight for 10th, 9th, or 8th. That's just simply not it. And you won't move forward if you focus on just doing the small minutiae improvements around where you are at the moment, the normal development I would call an F1 team. We've got to do some leaps. And to do leaps, you've got to kind of put the car as it is right now to one side and focus on putting systems in place that allow us to develop capability at a much higher rate than we have at the moment. And that's what's going on. So to answer your question, the near term, 1 to 2 years, everything is about putting in the right people into place, which will take typically 12 months. That's how long it takes to move people across organizations, and the right system structures, methods in place, and try and undo some of the lack of investment from the last 15 years. Some of that I'm going to need the help of the F1 Commission and my peers around me, because the investment, we're limited under a cost cap, and simply where we are today is nothing compared to Mercedes. Is the openness behind it really quite far behind in many regards. We'll get there, but that all again is going to take months to years to put into place. But my goal is to make sure that as we go through each of the years, you see us stepping up as a result of the process that we've been in place, and not getting caught up in the day-to-day, let's make the car as it is at the moment, in a small circle around it, an improvement, which is normal Formula One development.
Yeah. You mentioned about sort of getting new people on board, but it takes sort of a couple of years. Explain why it takes that long.
It's a good question. I think for probably those outside, many don't realize, but when you have really good individuals within an organization, you put them onto very long-term contracts. It wouldn't be abnormal to have a 3 or 4 year contract. So in that period of time, you can't go anywhere else. You're restrained to effectively the team you're with. Now, you sign that clearly because also you like the team that you're with and you don't have aspirations to change. that's very common in Formula One, certainly as an industry. And it's very hard to negotiate someone out of that much quicker than 12 to 24 months. You can sometimes, but the point is, it's a legally binding contract that they've signed to go elsewhere. So you're waiting for cycles for when they're coming to the end of their existing agreement elsewhere. So that's the purpose behind it. And it's unusual because most contracts would be 3 months or 6 months notice. That's how they're normally constructed. But in the world of F1, that's just, as you would imagine, not how things work.
Does that mean you as a team, Williams, does that mean you potentially have to look at doing things slightly differently? Do you have to look at youth? Do you have to look at younger individuals coming through that you can almost be a talent spotter and seeing people you think can take the team forward in the roles you're looking for, that where maybe the individuals ideally you'd be going for are in these long-term contracts?
First of all, you hit the nail on the head. I think you need to do both, though. I think you need a certain amount of experience coming into the organization that shows you the way, shows you what excellence looks like, gives you development. And then you need this pool of, exactly as you describe it, youth that are hungry for it, intelligent, but need direction on where to go. And you have to understand that those youth, we can't pressure them tomorrow to be at the level required. It's a training cycle. It will take them 3 to 5 years to be at the right level. But in 3 to 5 years, you have some incredible individuals that perform basically the new generation of Williams. So you need both to a certain extent. You don't need to completely replace the organization. That would be foolish. And we have very intelligent people here. You need one or two real key individuals.
Well, it's super interesting chatting to you so far, mate. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back, everyone. So next up, let's chat about what's going on here and now. So basically, give us a bit of an idea today. What is your day? What is it in store?
There's no one day that's the same as the next. I'll tell you that much.
I imagine that's quite nice.
Exactly that. So I go back to, why am I here? Every day is different. And we're now in a period where we're going to have three more races now. Effectively, it's a triple header, back to back to back on the weekend. So the amount of time in the actual factory, which is where the development work, where this next year's car and the year after will be quick, is not going to be done at the track. It'll be done here in the factory. So you want to maximize your time. So week on week, or day on day, certainly, if we break it down, you meet with all of the key individuals between your departments. So today, for example, before coming to see you, I was walking into our driver in loop simulator, spent some time with Alex, who's here on site as well, chatting to him that there was work going across the weekend in exactly the same simulator. So again, it's not a 5 days a week business. Typically, it's a 7 days a week business. And understanding where they've got to in terms of development. And our development now, what we're looking forward to is next year, the FW46. That's where we're putting our attention to. What we need to look like, how do we develop it, what our targets need to be, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a brief 15 minutes of my day, but an enjoyable 15 minutes.
And how is Alex feeling about the situation? Obviously, being able to poke your head in and see how things are going in that direction. Do you feel like he's he's upbeat in a minute. Do you think as a set of drivers, obviously Logan's new to Formula One, so maybe this situation for him, he's in that process of learning, but Alex is experienced, you know, a few years in Formula One now. Do you think when you look at him, you see a driver who's got the right mindset to lead the team in the right direction?
So I think Johnny touched on this before, but I never really got to the question. But let's go to Alex first of all, and then Logan. Alex, I've known for, I'm trying to remember the period of time, probably 7 years or so. So he was in the Mercedes, maybe 8 years. Mercedes simulator with George as well at the same time. Brilliant, brilliant driver. I think I'm incredibly happy he's in Williams. And he's very good at knowing how to make the car quick and get the most out of it. You've seen him in races where he has a car behind him that's definitely quicker. And 50-odd laps, not a single mistake from him. And it's hard to put in words exactly how difficult that is when you have a car behind 2/10 a lap faster.
I think I remember Spa last year, it was like that. You know, obviously you guys have got known for having a particularly quick car in a straight line, and that works to your advantage when defending position. But Alex did a mega job at Spa from memory of, you know, holding them off.
You're exactly that. It's not a situation, to be clear, I want to be in, but it does showcase his talent. And you'll know from your driving days, both of you, Johnny a little bit further back.
But, thanks.
But it's fundamentally, when you have that pressure of a fast car behind, it doesn't take much to put a foot wrong. You've got to be really on your lines every single time and making sure defending. One small lock and it's done and it's over. And it just shows you his talent coming out straight away. The car being in Q3 demonstrates it again. He's really just wrangling this around and getting every last millisecond out of it. And that just showcases his strength. Same now in the deal, where we are and where we're working forward on next year's car. His input is, whilst you're data-driven, that the driver is an incredible part of the process, has to be, of course, throughout this. And he's allowing us to drive the direction of travel that we need to be going in. Logan, as you said, new to it. He's now just a handful of races into the sport. And of those, in fact, he hasn't driven around any of them before, apart from in a simulator. He's never seen Miami, never seen Australia either. And those are, again, tough tracks. They're not easy tracks to get to grip with very quickly. You saw the amount of mistakes, especially across the Miami weekend, just to really highlight where that is. We're now going to a sequence of tracks, though, that will allow him to feel more comfortable in what he's doing.
Do you think that's been the missing ingredient, the fact that he's just generally not had the experience around those tracks?
I think it's a mixture of the two things. So if we go back to Bahrain, we had testing there. So he definitely had experience there. He's been there in Formula 2 as well. And what you saw, his first qualifying ever, he was in the same millisecond as Lando, just to give you an idea where he was. That's not bad on your first outing. Then from there, I think you've seen him grow in terms of understanding where Formula 1 is as his experience of tracks diminishes. So you've seen him fall away a little bit more. That said, still into Q2 a few times. He's getting there now. And now that we get to these tracks, you should have the combination of him learning across the first four races combined with the fact that he knows these tracks a little bit more. Even so, the journey of a rookie in Formula 1 now, you're up against world champions. Everyone near enough that is in Formula 1 is multiple world champions. So you're against the best of the best of the best. And so that journey is not one of 3 months. It's one that will take you a long, long time to get your foothold and make sure that you're comfortable. And you have to be supported through that process.
Yeah. So drivers, you're happy with the situation that you've got. What about as an independent team? Can you still win?
I think Aston have shown this year what you can do as an independent team. And to answer your question, I think Aston have a good chance of winning the race. Championship, no, because Red Bull have done an outstanding job.
Haven't they just?
But yes, yeah, I believe now. So Mercedes will always supply effectively equal equipment across the teams. That doesn't cause me any concern at all. We'll be in a situation that we have to do a better job. Where it's difficult, I alluded to it before, but this organization has lacked investment for 15 years, really. And what it meant is a lot of the equipment is just that, 15 to 20 years out of date. Mm. And to compete on that level in a cost cap is incredibly difficult. So if we have ISO equipment and we're able to effectively put ourselves into equal grounding, which is the direction of travel I hope that we'll be moving towards, we'll be in a situation where we will be able to compete as others are at the front.
Yeah, so the cost cap should benefit you then. Should do.
It's a benefit and a hindrance. The operational side, so to explain it a little bit without going too much into finance, the operational side, the OPEX, that's limited for all teams. That's a positive thing. The CAPEX is limited as well. That's your infrastructure, your systems, your composites area, your machine shop area, your simulator. That's in CAPEX. And those are facilities that, as I said, are 15, 20 years out of date. So we need investment in there. But the cost cap actually restrains us from doing that. I think you'll see that change. I hope you see that change over the next 3 months.
I hope so.
Because we want a meritocracy. We want everyone on the grid to be able to fight going forward. Most intelligent teams of engineers working together to move forwards. And we're a little bit hamstrung at the moment with that. But once that's in place, I think we have the facilities, we will have the facilities to move forward. And with the direction of travel we're in, we will be able to move forward as well. So to answer your question, yes, I see even with us being attached to a Mercedes engine, we have the possibility of winning World Championship.
Just, I'm just curious, sat here, like obviously you're describing the period of time that the team are going to need to go through to get back to the stage, like you say, where you've got the right system in place so you can fight for wins. What would you say, obviously Williams are a team with such history, they've got such a huge fan base, a lot of fans out there. What would you kind of say to them, where can their expectations be for the rest of this season and maybe going into next? What should they be hoping and aspiring to see from Williams as a team?
I think first of all, start with the season. As I said previously, irrespective of what we're trying to accomplish on 24, 25, 26, I go to every race the same as everyone was watching at home at TV, fighting for every millisecond we can, as does the whole organization. I think there's an element of reality on our shoulders. We know that we are 10th or 9th fastest team. There's just different teams behind us every day. And McLaren had a poor weekend in Miami, unusual for them, really strong weekend in Baku. So it's a little bit tricky at the moment because the teams that are in and around us keep jumping forwards and backwards. I think fighting for 9th in the championship is a somewhat sensible internal target to be setting. But the truth behind it is that we're not going to do anything that compromises next year or the year after or the year after that. And that's not the same situation as many of our peers that are on the grid at the moment. I'm here to make sure that we have a much better package across the next few years. And I think it's realistic to say we're in that fight for a point every now and again. That's what I want to be achieving. And as you saw, there's opportunity this year, three times, I would say, probably, of which we had one of them that we managed to achieve everything. Going forward beyond here, what you should be looking for is step forwards in the right direction. That's the really important thing. You're not going to see a leapfrog that suddenly puts us up into sixth or fifth, but every year you should see a step forward. And as much as that might seem slow progress, at the moment, if you look at what happens, because everyone's so invested in making sure your car's quicker, and to explain that, actually, I'll take a step back. Formula One cars that you have at the first race of the season are in no way, shape, or form the same cars you had at the end of the season. Part of it is the driver understands the car and the engineers understand the car far more. But even beyond there are seconds of performance added to the car through developments across that season. So that's the reason why if you took a car that was at the end of the year, even a midfield car, you would find that potentially could have won races right at the beginning, such as the development rate in Formula One. But here's the problem. You can't build and focus on future systems developments if you're running a million miles an hour just trying to improve what you currently got. So it's about trying to optimize what we've got as best as possible. And I still think there's points there to be returned whilst building systems for the future.
Yeah. So systems, as we know, are very, very important. We're in a boom at the moment. Formula One is very popular around the world. Is there anything that you would want to change in the sport?
I think we can do a better job of the direction of travel we take around the world. We're jumping a little bit between continents at the moment, and I think that will certainly improve things. I think I've already spoken about the ability for everyone to be on the same level playing field. I think that's important for it as well at the same time. Interestingly, though, you're right, it's a boom. And everyone I speak to outside of this enjoys the fact that it's a sporting spectacle. For me, I'd prefer, and I think all of us do as well, that the quality of racing will improve as I think the grid becomes closer in different parts. And it is already at the moment, but it will just make these beautiful situations where no one can quite predict. Doesn't matter if you're a strategist or not, what's going to happen going forward in the future. And I think that's needed as well. But I think as a product, the direction of travel is good. One concern, just to bring it up to everyone, is that 26 large rule changes, potentially good for racing. But obviously, large rule changes typically expand the field back out again. So for me, certainly, whether we go forward or not with that rule change, what's really important is stability beyond there, so that we allow all the teams to really start fighting to close back up to one another.
Yeah. Are you a fan of what we saw in Miami, for example, the presentation of the drivers?
Pre-race show.
Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I know the drivers weren't happy about it. Sitting at home, I thought, actually, it wasn't a bad thing. It's the only time in many respects you see the faces of the driver.
So here's my view on it. I mean, nowhere near either of you two, but drive as well. And I certainly, for half an hour before I get in the car, I'm completely locked down and no one can speak to me. It doesn't matter if they're family or not. I'm just trying to get into into what I need to do to go out and get into the car. And I'm confident it's the same for you too, and I'm confident it's the same for every driver I've worked with near enough. And so it's really tough just minutes before you have to go out there and put everything on the line to be in the limelight. That's what their frustration was. And in part, I get it. But I'm of a different view now, which is that we as a sport are growing because we are... Netflix has done this incredibly well, but we're showing what's happening in the internal workings. It's a human sport. Yeah, there's two incredible drivers in each team, but it's a human sport and there's 17,000 components behind it. I love that. Expose it to the world, create growth. And the reason why we're here today and the reason why it's a boom is because we've done that. And I think we have to go further in that direction in a way that's constructive for the sport. And for me personally, both the sprint race weekend formats, which happened just prior to that weekend, which I think is different. We're trying things that work.
Yeah.
Some are going to work, some aren't. And I think, again, this presentation that we're doing of the drivers, many, many people, they can't even see the helmet these days with the halo. They certainly don't see much of the driver's face. And I think it gives them an opportunity, exactly as you said.
Exactly. Yeah.
These are the superstars. And let's have a look at them in proper and understand a bit more about them. So I'm of favor for it. And the drivers will adapt in time, I think.
Well, James, you said the drivers are the superstars, but like you said earlier in this chat, the Formula One teams, it's a team sport fundamentally, and you're playing a huge role being team principal of Williams. So from both me and Johnny, it was a pleasure to sit down and chat to you. Thanks for your time. And we wish you all the best for the rest of the season. We're looking forward to seeing the direction and the development of Williams as a team with you at the helm.
That's very kind. Thank you both.
Well, I don't know about you, Johnny, but first guest on the podcast, you know, quite nice, wasn't it?
To have a chat to
James, really interesting guy.
Yeah, good to have a team principal on Lift the Lid. But it was interesting because I didn't know about the humble beginnings. I didn't know that he was doing an F3 team and he basically sort of run that Formula 3 team and now he's running a Formula 1 team.
Yeah, he's definitely had his own journey in Formula 1 and now, like you say, being team principal of Williams, a team with such history in the sport. Yeah, I found that really fascinating. I hope you guys listening at home enjoyed that one. And let us know, you know, in the comments and stuff like that, if you would like to see us, you know, chat to more people like James as we, you know, weave you into the world of Formula 1.
Yeah, again, it's going to be great to hear from you, but... to hear from James there, I thought it was fascinating. He seemed to be very much in the time and the future that Formula One is at the moment. And he is into what changes are happening. That's why I mentioned about that Miami and the drivers. And it's good. It's good to hear a team principal talking in positive ways for the sport. We've got to say thanks to Williams for allowing us to walk around this wonderful
heritage
site.
I'd love to do the podcast from here more often.
I know, I think we should do. I think I'm going to pop in. Lovely. Thanks, James, for
James
spending
was,
a bit of time
really
with us.
Nice to have a
really
chat with James.
That. Yeah.
Looking forward to the next one. This has been a Soapbox London and SBX Studios production. Our executive producers were Rome Wilkinson and Andy Bell.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode. and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.